Welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. These one might be hard to cause to tell you what issue they are because they're from Gold Key, and you know how they have those funky numberings, so I have to look inside the book. But these ones I didn't acquire. These were given to me by a friend of ours as they're getting ready to move, and I guess they found some comics, and they were old funny books like cartoons. And they gave me a stack of them, which is really cool. I got Wacky Racers number 5, which was really, really cool to get, especially since I'm loving Wacky Raceland. And this one is a Walt Disney comics and stories. It's from Gold Key. It's volume 31, number 10 from 1971. And I noticed they continue their numbering, so I don't know how that's going to map out in my database, but that's what it says in the inside cover. We have Porky Pig, number 31, from August of 1970. We have Walt Disney Presents O'Malley and the Alley Cats. This is a 15-cent comic. It is number 1 from 1971. We have Hot Stuff, The Little Devil. It's a 12-cent comic. Number 85 from Harvey Comics. We have The Pink Panther and the Inspector from Gold Key Comics. It's number 12 from 1973. We have Daffy Duck, a 15-cent comic from Gold Key. Number 70 from 1971. We have Sad Sack and Sarge, number 97 from Harvey Comics. I've never had one of those before. We have Walt Disney's Chippendale, a 15-cent comic from 1970. It's number 8. We have a comic book from Mexico, which is Blondie. And I don't know what number it is because I can't read any of it. And it doesn't have the inside cover. So that's the second comic from Mexico that I have. The other one that I have is a Demon Entegran from there. We got the Road Runner from 1969, number 13. It's Beep Beep the Road Runner. That's the actual title of it. We have Beetle Bailey. This is from King Comics. It's a 12-cent issue. It's number 59 from 1967. We have Bugs Bunny, a Gold Key comic. It's a 15-cent comic from Bugs Bunny 136 from 1971. We have Yosemite Sam and Bugs Bunny. It's actually Yosemite Sam in the inside cover, number 21 from 1974. One of my favorite Looney Tunes characters because he just gets pissed off. And the more he gets pissed off, the angrier it gets. We have Mickey Mouse and Goofy. This is under Mickey Mouse, number 132, from October of 1971. It's bi-monthly. We have from Gold Key, Tom and Jerry, number 283, from 1974. Also a cartoon I watched a lot. Another Tom and Jerry. This is number 260 from 1971. And yet another Tom and Jerry. This is from 1971, number 258. So we got Tweety and Sylvester from 1970, number 15. We have Tweety and Sylvester number 30 from 1973. And we also have a Tweety and Sylvester from 1971, number 20. So I want to thank Lenka for giving me these comics that she had, and I look forward to reading them. I've already read Wacky Raceland, and this has been another collector segment on Mike M's Weekly Reads. We'll come back with the Weekly Reads. Thanks. Welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. And before I get into the Weekly Reads, I want to talk about some feedback I got recently on an episode. And that was for episode 37. And it was on Sit Back and Wonder. And I believe in that episode I talked about the prototype that I bought for Doctor Strange. And the question that came up was from Paul Price. And Paul Price, I'm pretty sure I met at I met him either at Heroes Con or Baltimore. They blur to me, and I think it was Baltimore where I met him before. But I think Reed is in. I always see at Heroes. Paul said, "I'm not familiar with the concept of prototypes. Does it include any earlier characters that had the same name? Is it more like earlier version of concept? It got tweaked before it caught on. For example, DC had the name Starfire for a couple characters before it found success with the new Teen Titans character. Would the 70s Starfire be considered a prototype of Coriander, or would it be considered different concepts that happen to be the same name?" And you know what? I really don't know where the term prototype came from. I think it's it doesn't really exist for DC. Like, there are no prototypes. And prototypes don't necessarily mean in name. Like, the Doctor Strange prototype wasn't a Doctor Strange prototype. It was just a magical character. So I think what happened is Overstreet just saw, like, a trend of characters right before the superhero stuff broke out with Fantastic Four, and they started release stuff. And then they started to put prototypes together. I did find... there is an article, if you search for pre-Marvel prototypes, where it lists all of them. Like, there, in Amazing Fantasy 14, there's a Professor X prototype. Just some of these examples. Journey into Mystery 62 and 66 have Hulk prototypes. And really, they only... they're not in name, but they're totally different characters. There's like a Sandman prototype in Journey into Mystery number 70, Spider-Man prototype in a story called The Spider Strikes. And in this time frame, there were more of monster stories and stuff. And like, there's a Doctor Strange prototype in Journey into Mystery 78, and that's not the one I have. That one is called The Sorcerer, and it's just the fact that they were creating characters that had to do with magic before they launched it. Like Strange Tales number 67, there's Quicksilver prototype. I was an invisible man in the story. Journey to Mystery number 90. Overstreet Guide said it has an Aunt May prototype. If it wasn't the Ditko story in that issue, it was called The Midnight Caller, which has never been reprinted. So you could see there are like monster type stories where these prototypes came. I don't know who came up with this, but they have remained in the Overstreet guides since I can remember. So it was a very good question, and if you search for that, there's a really good article where they break out all the different prototypes for the different stories. Like, there's Ant-Man prototypes, Giant Man prototypes, Human Torch prototype. Although I don't believe the Human Torch prototype, because the Human Torch was kind of golden age. I always think of, even though it's a different Human Torch, you know, you had the android and then you had Johnny Storm. How could that be a prototype for Fantastic Four? So I don't, it's a really good question, a really good thing for me to look up, because I never realized it. I just took it for granted when I looked in previews. So like Starfire in the DC universe, which I have a full run of, that particular book had nothing to do with Coriander, which was the Teen Titan, and that's not listed as a prototype. It's just a name. And there, that was during the time frame that DC, maybe it was during the implosion, but they kind of like launched a bunch of fantasy type books. There was Sword and Sorcery, there's Starfire, there was The Warlord. A lot of books came out of that era. And Starfire was one of them. It was all kicked off by David Michelinie, and Mike Wolfsburg did the art for the entire thing. It had some Steve Englehart and Tom DeFalco as well, you know, writing that Starfire. And I have a full run of that, because I was really into collecting all of the 70s, like Sword and Sorcery. But I don't know if I have all of the Sword and Sorcery title, but I'm close. And Sword and Sorcery. must not have know what that name, Sword of Sorcery or Sword, yeah, it's Sword of Sorcery. Sorry. Yeah, I need to get issues of that. So I need, I, man, I can't believe I don't have that. I see you sent me down a rabbit hole, and now I have to complete that. Yeah, definitely have to complete that. I'm missing 2, 3, and 5. And that was Danny O'Neill on that with some Howard Chaykin art. So gotta have that. I love Howard Chaykin. So I need to seek those out. See what you did? You caused me to go down another rabbit hole. Thanks, Paul. But thanks for the feedback. They do talk a little bit about on that page about like prototypes for like Lori Lamaris in the DC side, which is kind of interesting. But all of it is pretty much the, you know, the, trying to see if there's anything that, there's a Watcher prototype. Very interesting article. Like, Monster Menace, it's a reprint, I think, of A Journey into Mystery 62, which I talked about the Hulk. It actually was in name. So you talk about some of these being in name. Zemu the Titan was called the Hulk, and then also there was a Hulk that Jack Kirby wrote, a character called the Hulk in Journey into Mystery 62. So yeah, there. This is a really good question, and thanks for the email. Thanks for listening, Paul. Means a lot to me, especially when you take interest in something like this because. It makes me think. If you get me thinking, I'll go down rabbit holes. But I always took, like I said, I always took it for granted that was just something that Overstreet said, and I don't know where it came from. And I tried to look where it came from. I might talk to Bob Breetal and see if he knows where that term came from, or if it's something that originated from Overstreet. So let's get into Mike M's Weekly Reads. So this is for, this is right after the convention, again, I guess a low week that week too. It was from June 20th to June 26th, and we'll start at the bottom. And no offense to the bottom, because three, remember, means I enjoyed it, okay? There's 2 3-out-of-5s, a bunch of 4-out-of-5s, and a few 5-out-of-5s. So at 3-out-of-5s, I had She-Wolf number 1. Just a weird, bizarre story from a werewolf story from Image. And I still kept getting it. It wasn't enough to stop me, but it does make me question why they went for this, because it reads very much like a self... what do they call it? Small press than it does an Image book. But it had some interesting things in it, so we'll see what goes, because I bought the full run on that. And then 3-out-of-5. I think I enjoyed this more after talking about it, but I had Dr. Banana's Monkey Magician number 1 from Luke Foster. I don't even know if he publishes under a company name, but I just say it's Luke Foster Publications. So I had, I forgot to summarize what I had, but Marvel was 6, Luke Foster had 1, Image was 1, and DC 10. Dr. Bananas falls kind of in a genre, like, humor that I don't necessarily get, but I did make some interesting analogies to this that made me enjoy it more. And then when me and Bill talked about it on Geek Brunch, I had a blast talking about it. So that was Dr. Bananas. It's basically about a witch who takes a monkey's hand, and he's basically a magician type thing. And he's trying to retrieve his hand the whole issue. And we correlate it to Lorna Bobbitt or whatever that one is who cut off his dick. Yeah. I don't know if it looked like that or not, but I thought it was funny. But, so, check that out if you're at a con. You know, he usually goes to North Carolina cons because that's where he's from now. And check out Dr. Banana's Monkey Magician. It's about a drunk monkey. Kind of written in all ages, but if you're drunk, is that all ages? I don't know. I'll let you decide that. I guess that's a parenting choice. Uncanny Avengers number 1 and 2. This is a really good one. This is a 4 out of 5, so I jumped in the 4 out of 5s. And I didn't expect to like this because I don't like Deadpool too much. But it was a team forms to unify the mutants, heroes, and Inhumans, kind of like have a little bit of everything. Spidey quits because of Deadpool, and you have a new villain called the Shredded Man. This title is my favorite of the Avengers titles. No. And then we get into another depressing story. This is a true story about Paul Dini and him getting mugged and kind of beaten up. And it's called The Dark Knight, a true Batman story. It's by Paul Dini and Ed Russo. Amazing artwork, amazing storytelling, really dark story, autobiographical, that led from the cartoon to So I liked it better, the first part of the story where it was talking about his, like, animation experience, like the Animaniacs and Batman, doing the cartoon and his, like, rise to fame. Then it had some really weird storytelling about he seems like he's very lonely, and he took a relationship that was just a friendship with another woman that was using him kind of like as a friend, but also, yeah, this woman was using him to, like, get to his relationship with Steven Spielberg and stuff, to try to get, like, she was like a B-film actress. I found that part of the story absolutely fascinating. And then when he got, the actual incident happened, it got really dark, and that was kind of like hard to read because it's like an emotional struggle for him to try to come out of his funk. But really well told in an autobiographical sense and really well drawn. So I'd highly recommend it. It's a hardcover. I don't know if it'll ever be a softcover, but then I started to read Black Lightning. Black Lightning number 1. This had Jefferson Pierce going back to school to teach at his old school, like where he graduated from. He loses a student to the 100. The 100 is an organization, the criminal organization, that kind of is run by Tobias. And Whale becomes his main villain, like, for the first 8 issues. And it's an origin story, and it says how he got his powers, and he basically has no powers. This becomes really interesting for Black Lightning fans. He has no powers. He has a belt that is able to generate a shield and the electricity that he can generate. And it also enhances his strength. Him personally, he's a decathlete, so he's very athletic. But most of his abilities are generated from that belt. What happens later, though, is very interesting. We'll have to talk about that. So New Suicide Squad number 21. This had Suicide Squad versus Adam Reed and the Fist of the Kane conclusion. I really enjoyed how this ended. It had Death Trap pretends to kill Deadshot. Death Trap was a character that was along in the story, and they pretended to be allies, but then he, like, turned on him. Death Trap actually turned out to be a good guy. He destroys the castle as he dies. Boomerang saves Deadshot. Now, that's interesting in itself. El Diablo makes a sacrifice to stay behind and fight Rose Tattoo, and the building is destroyed. That is pretty interesting now that I watched the film, because I read this way before the film, but if you watch the film, El Diablo makes a sacrifice too. So it just shows kind of like how he did some bad things, but he is seeking redemption, unlike the other members of the Suicide Squad. Like, he He feels that he did bad, so he's trying to do good. We had Scooby-Doo Apocalypse number 2. The virus spreads in the building. We have a new mystery machine, and the team is getting to know each other. Really enjoying this series. The next one up is become my favorite Hanna-Barbera property. It's Wacky Wasteland number 1. I remember watching these reruns on the USA Network. I did not see so many of them, and I don't remember a lot of it. And what I did remember was Dick Dastardy and Muttley, and because they were in Laugh Olympics as well. This is a fantastic reimagining of the world in a dystopian future, and I always like those type of features. The art was absolutely beautiful. The design of the cars, if you look at, see, if you go to Wacky Wasteland and you look at the design of the characters and the cars and you see how they morphed them, it was really in the vein of the actual cartoon. It just taken in a more serious world. They're racing for their freedom, basically, to go to, like, a area. You know how they have those worlds? Like, there was a Tom Cruise movie where you could get to, like, a utopia where the world is all perfect. And that's what they're racing for, to get to this utopia. Because the announcer, which was in the series as well, is kind of controlling things and making them race. It had backstories, Penelope Pitstop and Lazy Luke and Blubber Bear. The artwork is amazing. Who is Leonardo Manco? I'd highly recommend it if you like dystopian futures. If you're a fan of the cartoon, I'd also recommend it if you're willing to accept change. So, like, if you like both things and you like to see how things might morph into something different, which I always like something different, you might give this a shot. I'd say you'd have to like dystopian futures, and you'd have to like the property to appreciate that. Wonder Woman number 1, this was a 4 out of 5. This was Edda and Steve going after a terrorist. Wonder Woman seeking out Cheetah to find their mascara. That I liked a lot more when it was told initially. And then the even stories of the origin, which are just mind-blowing, and I absolutely love them. And then we had Flash number 1 from Rebirth. The cop August is struck by lightning and may become an adversary for Flash. I thought he was going to become an adversary. He still may be an adversary, but Harley's crazy. Flash trying to do two things at once and trying to keep close to Wally and Iris. But it was a really good first issue. I liked it. The way things panned out are very different. I think there's still something a little off with August. And where we go with this in the future. We have the next one I really, really enjoyed because of what I had read with the Cap stories. And Welcome to Pleasant Hill. This is Winter Soldier, Thunderbolts 1 and 2, Jim Zub's story. Winter Soldier's out there to protect Kobiek and continue his onslaught on S.H.I.E.L.D. after the events of Pleasant Hill. They actually find Inhuman cocoons. And Moonstone and Bucky fight for the leadership and authority. Kobiek thinks it's a game and pulls out Moonstone's heart, nearly killing her. The cocoons hatch alien beings and are contained and destroyed. And you'll see what happens, because the Inhumans appear at the end of issue 2. I really enjoyed this, and I like the art. It is very reminiscent if you're a fan of Rob Liefeld, which I am. I know he tends to put his foot in his mouth when he argues with stuff, but I think if you listen to him, he is very passionate individual about comics, and that's the part of Rob Liefeld that I like. And when his art happened in Hawk and Dove, I was blown away back in the day. And then when he started in New Mutants and then in X-Force, I absolutely fell in love with those books, and I'll still always hold them close because of memories. We had Detective. As a matter of fact, I think the artist for this book, and I can't remember his name, and I didn't write it down. I think he actually was the artist for the relaunch of Volume X of Youngblood. I'm almost positive of it. So we have Detective Comics 935 is the last 4 out of 5. This book has just become a flat 4 out of 5 all the way. This is the forming of the team, the training in the Belfry with Clayface and computer equipment. So he's actually has like a danger room that they're actually training to the point of exhaustion because Batwoman's driving them. Tim tries to confront Batman and tells him he wants to go to school. That comes into play later. Batwoman's father wants her to quit and join him. That also comes into play later, and Batman's confronted at the end of the issue by the colony. We have Aquaman number 1. This was a new embassy to unite the land. This was a 5 out of 5 for me. Black Manta poses as a Daily Planet journalist to blow up the embassy and injure Mera and Aquaman. This one I really, really liked, but when they're actually encountering each other, I thought like Manta, especially Manta, but they were just a little out of character. But not in this issue. Everything played out really nice. And Ronnie is right about Aquaman, and I'll just say that, and rebirthically, if he listens to this, I'll just say he's totally right. Aquaman's an awesome book. Action Comics 958 was the next 5 out of 5. You had Lex, Superman went toe-to-toe with Doomsday, and Ozymandias kind of watches. This is where the book, in my opinion, is the only book that has the continuing Watchmen thread because of that. Titans had it, Flash had it initially, Batman had a brief mention of it, and then they've kind of forgotten it after the last 4 issues. But hopefully it'll come back, or at least be a thread that exists in some of these books. In Superman in Action, he's been in it a lot. Uncanny Avengers number 10. Now this is a 5 out of 5. This was and the reason I had 1 and 2 down below, and then number 10, you might be wondering what happened, because in previous Mike M's Weekly Reads, I talked about Pleasant Hill. I read them out of order. I wanted to read that event. So I grabbed all the Avengers titles, all the Cap titles, and the Pleasant Hill front end, the bookends, and I read them all in one sitting. And this was number 10, and Janet was brought back to test Hank Pym to see if he was real, and I absolutely loved it because I love that relationship. We had Captain America, Sam Rogers, number 1. This isn't Sam Rogers. What the hell am I? Steve Rogers, number 1. This is Steve. Well, actually, it must be the Sam one. And I must have wrote it wrong. Because it's not Steve Rogers. It's Sam Wilson, number 1. This is where. And I think the number's even wrong. So I screwed this one up. And I can't point to the right issue. Maybe it's 11, but Sam. This is where Sam actually, the Falcon, gives a eulogy for Rhodey, who died in Civil War. So that I really loved. I really liked it. So that's the breakdown. We had 18 books, 6 Marvel, 1 Luke Foster, 1 Image, and 10 DC. Thanks for listening, and you can leave me feedback at mike@comicbooknoise.com. And at Twitter at Mike Myers Brunch is where I'm located on Twitter. You could go to Facebook at Geek Brunch Podcast, leave information there. And we're located at geekbrunchpodcast.com. And please send email. Please provide feedback. It gives me things to talk about, like Paul's email. And I appreciate you listening. And please leave an iTunes review if you get a chance. Thanks. Bye.